Hello and welcome to the IMD Podcast Network. Today, an episode of our sustainability podcast, Inside the Transition. IMD professors Julia Binder and Knut Hanes will be talking with Ram Muthu, Head of Operational Excellence at Holcim, one of the world's largest building materials platforms. The conversation revolves around change. How can such a resource-intensive sector move towards a sustainable future, and the ways in which competitiveness and sustainability can synergize?
Hello, I'm Julia Binder, and this is Inside the Transition, the IMD podcast that gives you a behind-the-scenes look at the energy transition and what it means for executives and their businesses. Few companies sit closer to that challenge than Holcim, and few leaders have a better operational vantage point on what it actually takes to transform construction at scale than our guest today. Ram Muthu is Head of Operational Excellence at Holcim, one of the world's largest building materials platforms. Ram has been with Holcim for 2 decades and was previously the Head of Strategy, where he was key to developing the company's green growth push. Construction clearly is responsible for a massive share of global emissions, materials use and waste. But it's also where some of the biggest transition opportunities lie. How fast can the sector really change? Where are the biggest bottlenecks? And what should business leaders realistically expect over the next decade?
Thank you, Julia. It's a pleasure for me to be on your show and really excited to have the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Ram. We're excited as well. Ram, let me kick us off. You've worked inside this industry through some pretty intense years of change. When you look at the transition from the inside, what we do in this podcast, through real projects, real plans, real constraints, how fast does it actually feel right now? Are we really building momentum, or are we still carrying a lot of structural weight from the past?
I think the last 4 or 5 years, I think in Holcim, I think we've really accelerated our decarbonization journey. I think when you look at our overall emissions, I think we were 9% down in the last 4 years. And we have a very good plan to reduce up to 25% of our emissions from 2020 to by 2030. We have a full-scale plan in place, which is actually being materialized on the ground. So we have our short-term decarbonization levers, which is really pushing to replace traditional fuels in our kilns and with alternative fuels. So this is a great push that is happening. And also with the alternative raw materials, we are also trying to reduce the clinker factor or reduce the clinker content and reduce the CO2 emissions in our products. So I see this push actually happening, and I see this push on the ground where it's happening. And it's also moving towards the next generation of operating model with carbon capture, carbon storage, all of this also coming into place.
This is pretty impressive, Ram. And at the same time, I would love to change perspective and say, if we look at global emissions, we're still not moving fast enough. And if you had to point out the biggest thing slowing us down today, whether that's technology, capital, policy, you mentioned regulation, day-to-day operations, what stands out in your experience? What may not accelerate us today?
Cement and building materials are probably one of the most hardest to abate sectors, right? If you want to look at how the CO2 emissions are formed in cement, if I go to the basics a bit, it's in two ways. One is the fuel, which is needed to light up our kilns and ovens to burn the material. So that was normally in the past, it used to be traditional fuels. And also the fact that limestone, the inherent material itself, when you burn it, you CaCO3, which is limestone, gets separated into CaO, which is lime, and CO2. So there is no, as in there's always an inherent process emission, material emission in our industry, right? So this is why I think it's one of the hardest to abate. But I also see that we are probably one of the fastest moving sectors, in this area. When I compare ourselves to other industries, manufacturing heavy industries, I see cement has moved a lot in the last 5 years. Probably, I think one of the key levers that is also needed also in the future for us is regulation. I think in the EU, we have a good EU ETS trading scheme, which is also helping the plants actually push to achieve the targets. And I think this is critical, I think, going forward, especially for the plants to actually, because I think next year is a bit of a step change in this regulation where the trading scheme starts to reduce the free allowances that is available. And that you will see the companies actually push towards higher, lower emissions and higher decarbonization efforts. So I think regulation is a critical role. I think we are quite aligned with the Net Zero Industrial Act or the Clean Industrial Act, which is fully aligned with the whole awesome strategy, I would say.
I mean, oftentimes when we talk about circularity, we need to really shift this perception of circularity being a single company game where Holcim just sets the pace and goes on its own towards actually taking the entire value chain, entire ecosystem along. So maybe you can help us understand a little bit how you engage with the ecosystem. How do you manage to get all of this momentum also across the value chain?
Great question. So actually, we operate in two ways for me in terms of circularity. When I look at the product side, I think the recent trend is our EcoCycle platforms, which we are starting to build, right? EcoCycle, in the name, which is S itself, is mainly working on construction demolition waste, right? So we mainly operate in most of the metropolitan cities where we actually either we have made investments, capital investments, or we have made acquisitions into buying construction demolition waste companies. I think recently, just last week, we bought three companies in Germany, in the UK, and in, I would say Belgium, where we really are pushing towards this. Today, we have 100 recycling centers, right? And last year, we did about 6.5 million tons of construction demolition waste, right? And we aim to grow this to 20 million tons by 2030, and the centers should go up to 150 centers, right? So what do we do with the waste, right? So the construction demolition waste, as in our centers, they segregate the material once it's crushed into rubble, right? You're able to segregate out the steel out of it. You're able to really get the pure rubble, which then we can either reuse and crush it into a fine material, which we can either reuse in our concrete or in our cement as a finished product. Or if it's too coarse, the material, we then use it in our kilns as a raw meal. So the pre-blending and the pre-mix with the limestone, we're able to use it. This definitely helps reduce our gross CO2 emissions, but also it also promotes the circularity of the products that we actually launch, right? And this is, for us, it's a highly scalable business, right, that we see. And I think we can go close to, I think our target is to reach 800 million net sales by 2030. And this is one of the key drivers that we are working for. The other business in circularity that we operate is what I told you around the waste business, right, where we want to repurpose the waste of the municipalities, of the cities, and we would like to basically use them in our kilns, right? So this is something which we've been doing. The waste business is something we've been doing for the last 20 years. And we clearly see, and we have been pushing regulation in Europe really to be able to deliver the size and the scale of this business that we have today. And I see that our competitors are also following and the industries are also following in this regard.
Ram, I would be curious, for people who haven't seen, and I think it's the majority of our listeners, who haven't seen the inside of such a recycling facility or a demolition site, what would surprise them most about the operational complexity behind something like recycled concrete or urban mining?
So it's not as complicated as an operating a cement plant. So I think it's very similar to that of a ready-mix plant, a simpler operation. I think normally the rubble, which is from the construction site, is then transported to our construction demolition centers, right? And there we have actually built a wholesome technology, I think, which we have a patent on, is our smart crusher, right? This is somehow which we have two of these crushers now, which we are kind of patented and we're trying to expand, right? So here it's really helps segregate the material, right? And then you're able to also do finer crushing, all of this, you know, in order to make the material ready for our businesses. So this is quite something that was innovated, that came out of our innovation center in Lyon, this crusher. And maybe if there's an opportunity, I would love to take you to our site in Switzerland where we're operating this. And I'm actually happy to show you and the students this site. It's quite innovative and it's very simple. It's not too complicated from a process standpoint.
Ram, I love your enthusiasm about innovation and entrepreneurship, which we definitely share. And now I want to nevertheless also play devil's advocate and say, okay, if all of the technologies are there, what part of the process remains then the hardest still to decarbonize, even if we have all the tools and technologies out there?
So I think what is eventually, I think, which is quite important, I think that will be there. I think we have our short-term decarbonization levers, which will actually get to reduce emissions by 25%, I think, by 2030. But to then do the full decarbonization, I think our industry still depends a lot on carbon capture and storage. Today, I think we are probably one of the leaders in our industry. We have in carbon capture and storage, we have 8 grants from the EU, which were provided for 8 of our projects. I have 21 projects across my 30 cement plants on carbon capture and storage in Europe at the moment. I feel there is the right regulation in Europe and the right push, But I think there needs to be a bit more development, a bit more push on the regulatory side that needs to happen, right? I think Net Zero Industrial Act, I think, also helps us with the storage, I think, which had committed to 50 million tons of storage by 2030. I think we need to see this developing faster. At Holcim, our projects are going at good speed, right? But we need also our value chain to also move as fast as us. So meaning I'm able to capture the CO2 in my plants, but then I need to transport it through pipelines. I need liquefaction centers to convert it to liquid CO2. And eventually I need to put them on ships and then find storage sites in the North Sea or the Mediterranean Sea at different sites. So I need the full value chain to move at the same pace as me. And there is definitely government regulation funding, which is kind of needed in order to actually make this a reality. Last week, I had the pleasure to visit one of my future suppliers and partners in the North Sea, right, in Norway. It's a company called Northern Lights. It's a joint venture between Equinor, Total, and Shell. They are operating the first CO2 storage well, injection well, for which is being primarily used for cement with our competitor. So we are also looking with them to really see how we can develop our partnership. A partnership is actually key. And for me, what was really interesting was to see it live in action. You know, that there is a 110-kilometer pipeline all the way in, and there is a well that goes 3 kilometers deep into the sea. And there's a clear how they monitor the CO2 storage, you know, with all of this. It's a working model. And this is what is going to happen in the next 10 years and 15 years. I see the entire industry actually being fully decarbonized.
Ram, when we look at the intersection of AI or digital and sustainability, we always look at it from two lenses. On the one hand, what you just described, how could we use digital and AI to actually have a more positive impact to accelerate our decarbonization targets? And then vice versa, how is AI creating new challenges, right? And one challenge is clearly the water use, the energy use. Another challenge that I would like you to maybe help us understand a little bit more is, how does this affect now your workforce? There is entirely new skill requirements. What kinds of capabilities do you need now in your industrial workforce that you may have not needed just 10 years ago? So how is that changing the equation?
I think it's adaptation, which is the most important thing, right? I think in our industry, I think it's very important to have a few positions which is critical in a plant when it comes to process, when it comes to maintenance. I think this is something which Holcim has been really strong on in terms of the certification programs that we have internally, right? And now what we are doing with the tools is we are adapting these tools into these programs to make it part of the certification programs, right, that they are able to also run on, right? So people are starting to use this and being trained on this and being certified on this, which is very important, because that's entirely needed for the sustainability of running the plant over years. So that's why I think once you do the certification for us, for a process engineer, it's important he has a proper career development, that he needs to do the job for 2 years before being promoted into his next role, rather than losing him immediately, right? So this is this certification program is kind of critical, right? And that's how we're adopting AI and the tools into these programs.
That's very insightful, Ram. Let me shift our perspective one more time and let's zoom out. We talked a little bit about regulation. One of the things that interests us a lot this year is obviously also geopolitics. And if you think about the last few years, in many ways we can say it was a stress test and in many ways reorganized global supply chains. It started with COVID. We had seen more wars. We now have increasing geopolitical tensions among some of the key players in our industries. How is that influencing or has changed the way you plan and run operations?
Our industry is a very local industry, right? Our products probably sell within 250 kilometers of our site, right? It's not a global supply chain. It's not a global network for our products that are there, right? Only in countries where we have excess capacity and we need to kind of ship out the product, that's when we look for export markets. But I would say 90 to 95% of our product is sold locally, right? So all of the regulation is very local, right? So that way, when you look at Europe, also within Europe, I think the Swiss market is mainly for the Swiss market. It's not like I'm taking the product from Switzerland and selling it in Romania, right? So for me, it's very local, right, for us, right? But in the way that we operate, our supply chains are moving a bit, right? I want at since I've I've taken over this function. Procurement is one of the key topics for me, where I think I see the biggest value, which we can add more, I think, coming in the future. One of the key principles that I've launched is elimination of single sourcing, right? You know, not only having a single source in your vendor list, right? Or when you go for tender. I think the other thing is also global sourcing. I think we need to be open to more global sourcing, and in order to make it more competitive, right? I think going forward, I cannot, and the same, I think, for instance, products coming out of China, out of India, out of Turkey, I think they are excellent best cost country samples for us, right? And especially for the mining equipment, I see China actually becoming an active player. I think European regulations are adapting their needs towards Chinese technologies to challenge, you know, the Caterpillars of the world, right? You know, they had always kind of cornered the whole mining sector. And I think the Chinese players are making a difference in this area.
Talking about going forward, Ram, let's together have a look into the future. And oftentimes it's said that the next 3 to 5 years are really decisive in our collective efforts to really tackle decarbonization and the sustainability transition at large. And if you just look at these very decisive 3 to 5 years, what do you see as the key operational turning points that you feel we really need to pay close attention to? You've mentioned regulation. Are there others?
I think delivery of all my projects, I think, which is critical. Internally, when I focus, I need to make sure that, you know, I have a target to reach 90% alternative fuels by 2030. I need to make sure this is actually, I can move the projects that are that have the resources, that the capital will be there. Important is to have people on the ground to implement the projects. You know, these are heavy equipment projects. This is not that I can just I take a team of 5 people that I can just go to a plant, take an equipment, fit it in. This is huge industrial scale size projects where, you know, there's a large forces that are needed to actually adjust big equipment, big machinery in the plants in order to actually reach these targets. And at the same time, I'm building up my waste market in order to have enough waste available for my cement kiln. So actually, critical part is actually execution, right? Focus on execution is critical for us in order to make this a reality.
Raman, I love how you doubled down several times on we may need to move from this big strategic perspective on this to really executing and now getting our foot on the gas pedal and really make it work. Ram, thank you for joining us and for giving us such a practical and operation-centric view on the execution of what the transition really takes in one of the world's most resource-intensive industries.
Thank you, Julia. It was a pleasure for me to be here. I was really happy to exchange with you, and I'm hoping I can invite you to one of our sites in the near future. Thank you.
You've been listening to Inside the Transition, the IMD podcast, where we explore how the energy transition is reshaping strategy, investment, and leadership.
That's all for this week. This podcast was proudly brought to you by the International Institute for Management Development in Lausanne. You can find out more at imd.org.